Thursday, July 11th. Today in Europe, there are reports that the Axis powers have reached agreements with Russia, Hungary, and Bulgaria to maintain peace in the Balkans until the Battle of Britain is over. Such reports are being issued from Rome. Italy also claims that its planes have damaged important units of the British fleet in the Mediterranean, while the British continue to bemoan the fact that the Italian fleet won't come out and fight. Now the news direct from Europe. London, Berlin, and Rome. First report from the British capital by Larry Lesser. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The Air Ministry has announced that the great biggest battle ever fought over England took place in the air over the Channel yesterday. At one time, more than 150 planes were in action. The British Spitfire and Hurricane pilots claim it was the greatest day in the history of the Royal Air Force. 14 raiders were definitely shot down and 23 more so severely damaged that it is almost certain that they did not reach the French coast. The odds against the British pilots were larger than usual. In one of the series of engagements, three Spitfires sighted 70 German aircraft flying from 2 to 3 miles up. The Spitfires climbed and attacked the topmost layer of fighter planes, shooting five of them down and damaging two others. The Air Ministry says only two British planes were lost, and the pilot of one of them is safe. Another German plane is reported shot down this morning, the 74th since June 18th. Whether the Germans mean to invade England or depend on their numerically superior air force to bomb these islands, docks, factories, systematically, hoping to force the British capitulation, is not yet clear. But one of the features of the German air offensive this week has been large-scale raids on food convoys in the Straits of Dover. As in the last war, the narrow Straits of Dover, separating France and England, are regarded as virtually impenetrable by submarines by reason of the famous Dover Patrol, destroyers which scour these waters day and night, listening for the underwater throb of U-boat motors. Now the Germans appear to be depending on their superior air strength in an attempt to seal these vital straits from the sky. None of the British Air Ministry communiques this week have mentioned any possible damage to the big ship convoys that thread the channel daily. But it is possible that in future, these British convoys will be protected not only from underwater attack, but by constant patrols of air fighters. Today, Great Britain moved to outlaw anti-democratic political organizations. The Home Secretary has issued an order making it an offense to attend meetings of such organizations corresponding to the British Union, which was headed by the already detained Sir Oswald Mosley, Britain's leading black shirt. Police raided the British Union's London headquarters yesterday. The building was empty when they arrived. That Britain might be headed for some form of compulsory news censorship was intimated yesterday by the Minister of Information, Alfred Duff Cooper. At present, the censorship system here requires that editors submit to censors voluntarily any item which, if published, might help the enemy. In France, the result of compulsory censorship was that any piece of news which the censors thought that somebody in the government might not like was banned, even though it contained not a shred of information useful to the enemy. And any article which grumbled at the government was withheld. The French public was ignorant of conditions which lay behind this wall of silence. Therefore, the newspapers here look upon Duff Cooper's hint at possible news censorship with great misgiving. Official circles at Ankara this morning formally denied a rumor that Soviet Russia had addressed an ultimatum to Turkey. These sources said it was impossible to emphasize too strongly the danger of accepting irresponsible rumors at the present moment. In England, the Ministry of Information has just announced that it will launch a campaign tomorrow to organize every man, woman, and child in England into a silent column to defeat the fifth column by killing rumors and stopping indiscreet talk and gloomy, defeatist conversations. We return you now to CBS in New York.
This is New York. That was Larry Lesser reporting from London. Here's a dispatch from Budapest. Premier Count Teleki and Foreign Minister Ciocci returned today from their conference with Adolf Hitler and Count Ciano, Italian Foreign Minister, and were welcomed by Transylvanians carrying their national emblems. "We return with the best impression," said Teleki. "We highly appreciate it that the Führer, in the midst of a life and death struggle and on the eve of a new trial of strength, took time to study Hungary's vital problems. He heard us with the greatest attention and showed goodwill combined with foresight. We are convinced that the Axis powers appreciate their friends and will stand by them frankly and steadily in good times as well as bad." A Geneva dispatch to the official news agency reported that political circles at Vichy forecast a reorganization of the French cabinet toward the end of this week. This news comes from Berlin. Broadcasts of the German wireless reported first that the French people would be asked by plebiscite to approve the proposed new totalitarian constitution, and secondly, that quarters close to the French Minister of Interior said that the outcome of the National Assembly vote on granting full powers to the government was catastrophic. Now back to Europe for more news. News reported from the German capital by Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
Good morning, this is Berlin. A new trade agreement between Germany and Sweden was signed yesterday and was announced this morning. The negotiations began in Stockholm on June 27th. However, no details of the trade agreement are made public here. It is obviously another link in the newly forged chain that is to bind Germany and the Scandinavian states together. A press report giving some surface details about the meeting yesterday between the Prime Minister and the Foreign Affairs Minister of the Hungarian government and Herr Hitler and Herr von Ribbentrop and Count Schanow was issued yesterday. Its emphasis is on the, quote, traditional friendship, unquote, between Hungary and Germany. And this causes some speculation as to whether or not a deal between the countries has been agreed upon. And such a diplomatic pact would probably involve new geographical changes in the Balkans. Hungary is interested in the return of the rich Transylvania province, now held by Romania. But such changes, if they are agreed to, we have to await the official end of the war. And then at the peace table, the map, quote, of the new order of Europe, unquote, will be disclosed. Contingent, of course, on Germany winning the war. The Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung states this morning that the United States is facing a great menace to the Monroe Doctrine and the German conception of that policy and the reported British blockade of Martinique. In view of the situation, the paper comments editorially that the United States should be in no mood either to denounce or to fight, quote, the restoration of the German pre-war relations with South America and commerce, nor regard such as economic penetration. And then referring to the pending political struggle in America, this paper states, quote, if tomorrow the platforms of the Democratic Party, Chicago, and the pending Havana Conference should give supporting emphasis to the British future, leading men on the other side of the ocean should not forget the fate of France, fulfilled in 6 weeks, unquote. Meanwhile, Ambassador William C. Bullitt has arrived in Vichy, where he has conferred with Marshal Pétain, head of the new armistice government of France, and Pierre Laval, the new foreign affairs minister. According to reports reaching here from Geneva, the American ambassador discussed the future of the French possessions in the New World, particularly Guadeloupe and the island of Martinique. At Vichy, the National Assembly is now in session to give France a new authoritarian government. This proposed junking of the Republic seems to have the support among many of the officers I met on the trip into France the other day. Whether the new regime has the same support from the men on the street is another thing. There seems to be no checking on the wishes of the electorate by the representatives. For one thing, I found that communication in France is still in a chaotic state. The people in Toulon had little idea of what was going on, except brief reports in the Riviera press about events and the plans of Vichy. Here's what the Matin of Marseille had to say. Quote, there is to be no reform of the old constitution, but an entirely new constitution based on the principles of authority, hierarchy, and discipline. We know that the government will not act by issuance of decrees, which recall parliamentary methods not based on reality. But, says the Matin, Marshal Pétain will take certain acts, unquote. As the paper explains, the first of these will be to promulgate the new constitution of France, already prepared by the Pétain government. However, as you know, France for almost 2 years has been governed by decrees, which in effect gave the government authoritarian powers. So the transition to the new constitution may not be so difficult. Albert Chicherie, the French Minister of Agriculture, has announced that food cards will continue to be issued in that country throughout the fall and winter. This rationing is proposed in view of the uncertain food condition for the pending year. Semi-diplomatic relations have been resumed between France and Germany, for the French government has appointed a special delegate who is to represent French interests in the administration of the German occupation of the country. He is Monsieur Noël, former French ambassador to Poland and a member of the French armistice delegation at Compiègne. This is Edwin Hartridge. I return you now to Columbia and New York.
From Berlin to New York and back now to the Italian capital for the news reported by Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. The Italian High Command has just announced that fascist airplanes bombed and set afire the HMS Hood, Great Britain's largest battleship. The war communique reports that the success was scored during the action which took place south of the Balearic Islands. As we reported to you last night, Italian planes attacked a formation of British ships in the Mediterranean between the Balearics and the coast of Algeria. Now the Italians say they have positive information. Their victory was at the expense of the 42,000-ton Dreadnought Hood. The Italians also say that the aircraft carrier Ark Royal was hit squarely on the bridge by two large caliber bombs. The Italians announce they have photographs to prove this. The British island Amota was again attacked by waves of bombers throughout yesterday. The official communique says the attackers saw explosions in the arsenal and fires aboard ships in the harbor. Three British fighters have been shot down by Italian bombers, and two fascist planes have not returned to their base. The papers today are filled with what they call the great victory of the Italian naval and air forces over the British in the Ionian Sea, which divides Greece and Italy. We reported the details of that engagement to you last night, and the high command announces today another British ship had been hit by bombs. The Italian losses were heavy, but Rome claims a victory because the Italians diverted a projected attack on the bases in Sicily and the mainland. There is almost no agreement, as you have noticed, between the British and Italian accounts of this engagement. The Italian High Command and the fascist press say they are more than satisfied with the result. The Popolo di Roma calls it a black day for the English Navy. The Mediterranean, it says, is no longer secure for the British. According to maps published in the papers today, the Italians engaged their enemy 24 hours after they were first sighted, and after the British approached nearly 300 miles closer to the Italian coast. These maps show that the British formation was first seen in the Mediterranean between the Greek island of Crete and the North African coast of Libya. The engagement took place about 90 miles off the coast of Sicily. The British say that the Italians took refuge under cover of their coastal batteries. But the maps of the maneuvers printed here show that the battle was too far out to sea for that. Foreign Minister Ciano returns to Rome today. He is bringing with him the decisions of the Axis for the new order in southeastern Europe. Most people believe that he will report to Mussolini on how the frontiers of Romania can be taken apart and put together in a different jigsaw puzzle. Ciano's talks with Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop and the Hungarian Premier and Foreign Minister at Munich are said to have agreed to divide up Romania on paper at least. And they expect peace to be maintained in the Balkans as a result. A new law went into force here today, and it affects the radio audience. From now on, no Italian is permitted to listen to broadcasts from enemy or neutral countries. The only foreign transmissions the Italians may hear are those from Germany. A financial regulation was passed today. The state collects 2% of all salaries and transactions. The money is given to maintain families. But that doesn't help the Americans in Italy who still want to go home. At the present moment, the only way to get to Lisbon is by airplane. The Italian airlines operate a regular passenger service to Portugal, but that doesn't make a bridge. Americans are forbidden to sail on ships or fly in airplanes of belligerent. And at the same time, the American consulates are under orders to urge every American to return home. So the consulate officers are in a dilemma. There's no use urging an American to leave because the only way he can do so is to violate both the neutrality law and the passport regulation. This is Cecil Brown in Rome returning you to Columbia in New York.
That concludes this morning's report of European developments, which comes to you each morning at this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Earlier, we listened to Larry Lesser reporting from London, Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin, and Cecil Brown, who just concluded his remarks from Rome. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.